This Janet Mefford Today podcast is sponsored by Liberty HealthShare. Liberty HealthShare is a nonprofit healthcare sharing ministry that allows you to control and manage your own healthcare and choose any doctor or hospital in the nation. If you're a freedom-loving American looking for contract-free healthcare, call now 855-585-4237 or go to libertyhealthshare.org.
This is Janet Mefford Today.
Our confidence is in Christ alone.
Are we going to stand with God, come what may?
If the Word of God says it, I believe it.
And that's the way it is.
And now, here is Janet Mefford.
Well, thank you so much for joining us again. There's no doubt that radical leftists hate Christianity and are waging war against those of us who believe in Jesus Christ, the Bible, and the principles of our American Republic. What is fueling this war at root, and how is it a threat not only to Christians, but also to all freedom-loving Americans? We're going to talk about it today with noted conservative commentator and best-selling author David Horowitz, founder and CEO of the David Horowitz Freedom Center in Los Angeles. His latest book is called Dark Agenda, The War to Destroy Christian America. So good to have you with us, David. How are you?
I'm pretty good. Thanks for having me.
Thank you. Well, this is interesting. As you note, you were born into a Jewish atheist family, and you say in the book you're an agnostic. So why does this war to destroy Christian America concern you so much?
Because when I realized the left was an evil movement, and I mean that in the full sense of the word, if you recall, a claim to be defending the Vietnamese against American imperialists.
Yeah.
But when the communists, when they left, drove America out of Vietnam, and the communists proceeded to slaughter 2.5 million Indochinese peasants, there wasn't a single demonstration. So I understood that the left progressives, they're a destructive force. And you can see even today they're trying to take apart the Constitution, eliminate the Electoral College, and on, lower the voting age.
Yep.
Soon it'll be 12.
Yeah.
When I came out of the left and I re-looked at America, we have been wrong, but I came to appreciate what America's about. And if you think of... just in our birth certificate, we hold these truths to be self-evident, that all men are equal and endowed by their Creator with certain inalienable rights to life, liberty, and the pursuit of happiness. Now, even as radicals, we wanted life and liberty and the pursuit of happiness. But the only reason they're unalienable, which means they can't be taken away, is because they're God-given.
Right.
So, I mean, that was easy to understand, that idea. More difficult for an agnostic to embrace it. But I realized if I didn't have respect for the belief in God, if I don't have respect for the people who are believers, I can't defend my own freedoms.
Mm.
That's what the foundation of all the freedoms in America actually are. Their Protestant ideas.
Yep.
They came out of the Protestant Reformation, and the most powerful one was called the priesthood of all believers.
Yes.
Before the Reformation, you couldn't get to heaven except by going through the Catholic Church and its priesthood. But, you know, a church is a human institution, and it's subject to all the corruptions of human beings. Christopher Hitchens, who was the most entertaining atheist, wrote a book called God Is Not Great, How Religion Poisons Everything.
Right.
But he got it upside down. It's human beings that poison religion.
Yes.
And that's the fundamental, that's what we're fighting over in this country today. The idea that we're the problem. I mean, I think every Christian knows this. That we're the problem.
Oh yeah,
And that's why, yeah, that's why you have to have morality and laws, because people are dangerous. We see it all around us, and the people who are in the government are also, they're dangerous because they're the same people who made the problems.
Yes,
but they have more power.
Yeah, they are.
And that's so. the assault on Christianity is an assault on the fundamental foundations of this country, and we are in a fight for our national life.
I agree here. With you. Yeah,
and you see when you begin to strip moral, you know, you don't have moral principles, you wind up. I never thought I'd live to see the day that laws that allow you to kill a child that's already been born.
I know.
Let alone the unborn. Uh-huh. I mean, it's what Ronald Reagan said, we're a generation away from barbarism.
Yeah.
Freedom has to be defended in every generation. And, of course, my book, Dark Agenda, about this war to destroy Christian America, is in part about the creation of the religious right after Roe v. Wade, which has saved our country.
Yeah.
It elected Reagan, and then it's elected Trump.
Yes.
And I worry, because I know that religious people often want to turn their backs on the world and you know, focus on the next life. But if the religious right and its soldiers don't get into this war in a big way, there won't be any churches.
I know.
It's I don't fully understand it, because Christians, they do missionary work. They'll go halfway around the globe and spend half their lives dedicated to converting people to Christianity, but you have to begin by defending it at home.
Oh, you do. You do. Well, you know, David, it's interesting you bring that up, because one of the problems we're having within the confines of conservative evangelicalism right now is we have a growing number of leaders within our own ranks who are on the social justice kick. And as you note in your book, social justice is kind of just another term for communism, which a lot of people don't realize. But this is, we're fighting this war as Bible-believing Christians, not just from without, but we're fighting it from within now. And I'm wondering what your thoughts are on fighting against that inside your own churches, because I don't know how many people outside the church realize that that battle is taking place.
Well, I am aware of it. I discuss in my book, and one of the, there's two things that I think should be attract Christians to reading this book. One is the fact that it's written by an outsider. So my testimony, you can't challenge my testimony. I don't have, it comes right from the heart.
Yes.
And my understanding of this country and what it's up against.
Yeah.
But the other is that my parents were communists. I understand the left. I've written a lot of books about the left. And the left is really a kind of religion. Actually, it's a religious heresy.
Yep.
And this may be useful in your battles with the social justice people who are seduced by the siren song of social justice. Social justice, the idea is that we're going to make a world that's where everybody's equal, where there's no racism, no sexism, no homophobia, no wars, and so forth. We're going to basically have the kingdom of heaven on earth. I mean, that's the idea behind it, and it'll be done without God.
Right.
It'll be done by human agency. Now, all the left, as I say, is a Christian heresy. The name for it is Pelagianism.
Yes, exactly.
Pelagius was a monk in the 4th century, and he believed that sin was against human nature, that human beings were naturally good. If they were true to their nature, they would be good Christians, and if they were good Christians, they could create, you would have the kingdom of heaven on earth, because they wouldn't be bigoted, they wouldn't be full of hate, and so forth and so on. They would be charitable. St. Augustine, who's the godfather, I describe him in the book, of modern conservatism, understood that we all share an original sin.
That's right. David, hang on.
Human beings.
We do. David, hang on a moment. I do need to pause for a quick break. David Horowitz will come back in a moment talking about his book, Dark Agenda, The War to Destroy Christian America. We'll be right back on Janet Mefford Today. Are you among the millions of Americans who feel uncertain when it comes to your health care? As a Christian, are you looking for health care that doesn't violate your morals and convictions? Well, we're happy to inform you that there is a solution, and that solution is Liberty HealthShare. Liberty HealthShare is a community of like-minded Christians who work together to pay for their medical costs. It allows you to decide how, when, and where you will access health care so you can make the best choice for you and your family. Starting at $199 a month for a single, up to $529 a month for a family. That's mom, dad, and all the kids. This is how healthcare should be. For more information, call 855-585-4237 or visit lightyourliberty.com. That's lightyourliberty.com and regain control over your healthcare costs. 855-585-4237 or lightyourliberty.com. Together, we're changing healthcare for good. I like to read, and whenever I can, I like to read the Puritans. John Gerstner once said that the Puritans constituted the greatest movement in the church since the days of the apostles. That's quite an endorsement. I'd like to recommend a publisher committed to the writings of these godly men. It's called Northampton Press. Men such as Jonathan Edwards, Thomas Watson, Jeremiah Burroughs, and John Bunyan are just a few of the great preachers they've put back into print for us. Many of these titles have not been available since the 1600s, but now they are in print. These books have been retypeset, slightly updated for modern readers, and printed in such a way as to last hundreds of years. I can personally recommend them to you, having read many of them myself. Mention Janet Mefford in the comment section of the order form and receive a free copy of the book Law and Liberty, A Biblical Look at Legalism with any purchase. For more information, visit their website at northamptonpress.org. And remember, it's NORTHamptonPress.org. Welcome back to Janet Mefford Today. My guest, David Horowitz, founder and CEO of the David Horowitz Freedom Center and bestselling author. Great book just out, Dark Agenda, The War to Destroy Christian America. And David, I think your analysis is spot on when you're talking about the roots of the left and their worldview. You refer to the Pelagian heresy, and Christians, of course, will know about this. Pelagius, who rejected the concept of original sin, versus Augustine, as you mentioned, who is really the precursor to Reformation thought and on into evangelical thought today. This is important, the roots of the heresy versus the roots of the truth.
Exactly. And it's the most important thing. Adam and Eve, you know, inhabited the Garden of Eden. It was better than social justice or communism. Not only did they have, you know, equality, this, that, and the other, you know, there was no death. There was no pain in childbirth and so forth. Yeah. But God laid a condition, which is you can't eat of the tree and knowledge of good and evil.
Yes.
And they were seduced by the serpent into wanting to eat from that tree. They disobeyed their creator, and they got expelled from the Garden of Eden. That's a powerful image there. There's an angel with a flaming sword at the gates of Eden to prevent the return. The only way you can get back to paradise is by a divine intervention. Yeah. That is a true religious view. These liberation theologians, well, they're just Marxists, actually. But
yeah, they are.
The social justice religious movement, it is seduced by... Remember what the serpent says to Adam and Eve? If you eat of that tree, you shall be as God.
Mm-hmm.
And that is the problem. That's why progressives are so dangerous. I spent 30, 40 years trying to warn conservatives not to be so nice. These people are very dangerous.
Yeah, they are. They are.
They will kill the born. They will put you in the gulag if they have the power. The arrogance. You know, I'm thinking, my book opens with the massacre at the Sutherland Church where 26 churchgoers were slaughtered, including a whole family.
Yes.
And at the time, these atheists, Hollywood atheists, were mocking people who prayed for them.
Yeah, they were.
And they don't understand prayer. I mean, the first thing about prayer, it's not about you. I mean, Christians know the world is born to trouble. There's going to be a lot of trouble in this world, and God isn't going to solve everything here and here and now, because we've been given free will, which is another thing that the left hates. I'll come to that in a moment. But the first thing that happens if you pray is it humbles you.
Mm-hmm.
And the one thing that you know about all these self-righteous leftists who call themselves progressives and these Democrats is they don't have any humility.
True.
They're so arrogant.
Yes.
I mean, they have this 29-year-old moron, Cortez, remaking the whole world.
Yeah.
I mean, just think of, you know, the Green New Deal. That's communism.
Oh, sure.
You can't take away how many gasoline engine cars do you think there are? Maybe 300 million in America?
Yeah.
Maybe 150 million owners?
Right.
And you're going to take them away in a 10-year period, and it's going to cost people. They're going to lose cars that they love. And they've had the choice, you know, to have an electric car. But how can you do that without creating a police state?
Exactly.
These people are totalitarians.
Yeah.
And you should never forget that.
Yeah.
It's just absolutely crucial.
Well, it is.
It's the other idea of the Protestant Reformation, salvation by faith.
Yes.
That we're sinful.
Yep.
And we don't deserve, nobody deserves to get into heaven. So you can only get there by divine grace.
Mm-hmm.
The left thinks they can take heaven by storm.
Hmm.
You know, it's a Tower of Babel story.
Oh, it is. It is.
Same idea.
Yeah. Well, you said, like, the social redeemers, as you say in your book, on the other hand.
That's what I call them, yeah.
Yeah. I love that phrase because you're contrasting them with Christians who want to save individual souls. And we believe, you know, salvation by faith alone, through Christ alone, by grace alone. This is the Christian message. And the social redeemers, on the other hand, don't see individuals as agents of their own destiny. They see them as products of social forces. And that's why you say that through the progressive lens, individuals and their choices disappear. Because a lot of people, I don't think, understand that. Why are they so into collectivism? That seems to be why.
Look, it's a human weakness to want to be freed from responsibility.
True.
So the idea that we're accountable, the idea that we have free will, that we choose good or evil, it's not forced on us. It's essential, and they don't believe that at all. You know, just look at the abortion issue. I mean, they say it's women's reproductive freedom to choose. Women make a lot of choices. Unless they're raped, they make a lot of choices before they get to the choice of abortion.
Sure they do.
They have to choose to have sex.
Yeah.
They have to choose a partner to have sex with.
Yep.
They have to choose whether to have unprotected sex, or and if they have had an accident, they can choose to take the morning after pill now.
Yeah.
But all of that comes before, and I understand that there's theological issues there, but just from their point of view, before, now they face the ultimate choice, and that is, whether to, even if they don't want the child, to give birth to the child and find it a loving home, mm-hmm. or to kill it.
Yeah.
So what they really want is freedom from responsibility for the choices they make.
That's it.
They want to, you know, get out of jail free pass.
Right.
For having an abortion.
Right. But if there's no God to answer to, as we remember at the DNC, where they were trying to put God back on the platform and they got booed. Yeah. If there's no God, then do whatever you want. It doesn't matter. But that does not bode well for Christians or Jews or any other freedom loving Americans who stand against the left. Because look, if they will do this to a fully formed baby and say when the baby is born, if the mom doesn't want to do anything to save the life of a botched abortion, you know, the baby who survived an abortion, what would stop them from killing anybody else? That's the scary part that we don't want to talk about, but I think we ought to.
That's exactly right. There's no bottom to human behavior. As unfortunately, we have examples almost every day of the term. In fact, I mean, one of the actually beneficial things about television, and there aren't too many, but you know, these reality crime shows that show you how terrible people are, the things that they'll do, and how vulnerable we all are.
I know.
To me, it's just, you know, well, you can see in the Democratic Party, they, you know, okay, no borders. So how many infectious diseases are coming across those borders for illegals who don't have to go through a medical screening?
Yes.
Yeah, how many criminals? It's just quite amazing to me that any adult could not see that an open border is a danger.
I know.
Unless, of course, you live in a gated community like all these Hollywood people do.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Well,
you know.
Yeah. And you look at all of this. I'm thinking of Chesterton's old line where he said, I find it amazing that people reject the doctrine of original sin when it's the only doctrine that can be empirically verified. It's true. I mean, it's so all around us all the time. But what do you see ahead for Christian America in light of the all point assault on Christian America right now, both from without and within?
If you didn't believe in miracles before the 2016 election.
Yeah, good point.
You're very persuasive. We finally have a leader who will fight. And you know, it's good on a lot of grounds. And one is, of course, Trump isn't your model Christian.
Right.
But he is an American patriot, and he understands the religious foundations of this country and is willing to defend them. I mean, I was brought up as a fighter because I grew up in this communist family. And it's always bewildered me, ever since I came into the right, how Republicans don't fight.
I know. I know.
They just lie down.
I know.
So I think we have very good things going. First of all, we have the Christian community that supported Trump.
Yep.
To their credit, could separate the man's kind of character history from, you know, what he the promises he made, the promises he kept, the actions he took in defense of the country and in defense of its religions. So I think those are two hugely positive things.
Well, I agree with you, David. David Horowitz, the name of the book, great book, by the way, Dark Agenda, The War to Destroy Christian America. Love your work, David. Thank you so much for being with us.
Thank you. Thank you so much.
Thank you a lot. I really appreciate having you here. God bless you, and we'll be back. This Janet Mefford Today podcast is sponsored by Liberty HealthShare. Liberty HealthShare is a nonprofit healthcare sharing ministry that allows you to control and manage your own healthcare and choose any doctor or hospital in the nation. If you're a freedom-loving American looking for contract-free healthcare, call now 855-585-4237 or go to libertyhealthshare.org. We are back. effort today. I am very thankful today. I'm thankful every single day for all sorts of things. Thank you, Lord, for everything. But I am really thankful today because Newsbusters, the Media Research Center, did a story on Vimeo censoring the content of Fairview Baptist Church on the Livestream account, which, as you know, Livestream also was the account that we used on the godsvoice.us website to stream our God's Voice conference videos. And when Vimeo got wind of this, they destroyed the account. And they told the church, as you know, because we talked about this on the show when it happened, that we don't allow anybody to have sexual orientation change effort viewpoints and all the rest. It's totally ridiculous. Fairview Baptist Church had all of its content removed for the last at least 7 years, including all of its sermons. Really, Vimeo? And you look at some of the other content Vimeo allows up there, but all the sermons have to go. It's ridiculous. We have really crossed a terrible line here where we now have these tech giants censoring Christians for Christian content. And something's got to be done about it. But at any rate, they had a story about this over at Newsbusters, and I got an email from the reporter asking me to weigh in. So I did. So I was really, really glad for that coverage. It really means a lot to me because I'll tell you what, every single story of a Christian or a conservative being censored needs to be covered. How in the world can you keep track of what has been going on in total if you don't keep track of each individual incident? And it's, I know, really at a point where you say, oh, another one. But this is a new one. I don't know of any other church that has had its entire account removed with all of its sermons simply because it posted videos of a Bible conference. That's where we are, folks. And you got to think about this. If they would do it to Fairview Baptist Church in Edmond, Oklahoma, they will do it to your church. And if they do it to our conference, the God's Voice Conference, which was all about upholding the Word of God and what it has to say on the very critical issue of homosexuality, gender identity, sexual orientation, and all of these other lies that are being perpetrated in our own day, then they'll do it to your conference if you go down that road. And I think the net effect of all this, they know very well, is to try to intimidate people from saying what we're saying and doing what we're doing. And the answer from the biblical Christian to all of this has to be, we will not be intimidated. We will share the gospel of Jesus Christ. We will give hope to people who are in the homosexual lifestyle, who don't want to be in it forever, who want a way out, who want forgiveness, who want healing, who want transformation. That's what Jesus has offered to anyone who will repent of his sin and turn in faith and trust in his saving work on the cross and his resurrection from the dead. And we're not going to stop saying that. So I'm really grateful to Newsbusters for getting the word out, grateful for LifeSite News, grateful for Christian Post, the other sites that have been covering what has happened to us. And I just ask you to pray for us and pray for Christians in this country and pray that we will be able to find a way as Christians to get our voice back in the media. And I get really frustrated, in fact, that you have these hearings in Congress on Facebook and Twitter, and nothing really seems to happen. You might have a little movement here or there, but we know darn well that the big picture here is they want to censor conservative and Christian voices. And to what extent are we really winning the war on that? We have to win the war on that. I go back to an interview that Brent Bozell of the Media Research Center did in April of 2018 with Laura Ingraham on Fox News, talking about a report they had just released called Censored, How Online Media Companies Are Suppressing Conservative Speech. And I'm very glad for this report because they are tracking who is being censored online. And Brent Bozell really had some strong words talking about this report, along with strong words on the takeaway from it all. This is cut two.
It's 50 pages documenting what conservatives have been suggesting has been happening. It sounds hyperbolic. This is the emerging, the greatest censorship of free speech worldwide in the history of man. And let me explain this. The left is on a jihad against conservative thought. It's happening in academia, in entertainment, in business, religion, everywhere. Everywhere where they're attacking, they're suppressing conservative thought. Now they're going to the social media giants. These social media giants have audiences in the billions. And what we've shown in this massive report is whether it's Facebook or Twitter or Google or YouTube, they're all employing different tactics to go against conservatives.
Exactly. They're going against conservatives all over the place. And I would argue, when you talk about it happening in academia and business elsewhere and religion, not every religion. May I just point this out? Not every religion. Then he is asked, well, what can conservatives do? This was what he said. Cut three.
Well, the first thing you have to do is recognize what is going on right now. You know, Jack Dorsey is the CEO of Twitter. He put these things in this right perspective. Just recently, he promoted an article that called for the destruction of the conservative movement. Promoted it.
Yeah, he retweeted it.
So it's not just happening in the United States. It's all over the world that the left is militant. Conservatives have to recognize this, and conservatives have to start looking for new homes.
Well, I think along with looking for new homes, the bigger issue would be fighting back. That's how I feel about it, because they'd love for us to find new homes, very teeny tiny homes in which we can't reach the billions that we could reach if we could be on these virtual monopolies of these tech sites. So I think we should fight back. And in fact, this is why I'm so excited about what Devin Nunes is doing, the GOP representative from California. He filed a major lawsuit now seeking $250 million in compensatory damages and $350,000 in punitive damages against Twitter and some of its users. You heard about this? He is accusing, according to Fox, he's accusing Twitter of shadow banning conservatives, which we know they do, to secretly hide their posts, systematically censoring opposing viewpoints, and totally ignoring lawful complaints of repeated abusive behavior. He talked a little bit about his lawsuit over on Fox. Listen to cut one.
Yeah, so this is the first of many. And what we're doing here is we're actually going after Twitter first because they are the main proliferator and they spread this fake news and the slanderous news. So if you look at the lawsuit, I think at night people can go and look at it on Fox News. It's all there. But the case we're basically making is this was an orchestrated effort. So people were targeting me. There were anonymous accounts that were developed. And look, there's not supposed to be. These accounts aren't supposed to exist. Twitter says that they don't have accounts that do this. So, like I said, this is the first of many lawsuits that are coming. But there were several fake news accounts, whether it was regard to the Russia investigation or to me. And we have to hold all of these people accountable, because if we don't, our First Amendment rights are at stake here. This isn't 20 years ago. What's happening is that Twitter becomes the gaslighting for all of the news. And when they're regulating us, they're regulating what people can see on my tweets, which they've done, and then they're proliferating out things that they agree with the algorithms that they develop. They need to come clean. They're not
banning,
a public
right?
square. They are content developers.
Well, think about this for a moment. These tech giants are very big on their community standards. We have standards that we have established, and when you established your account, you agree to these standards. Okay, first problem is they never apply those standards equally across the board. That's the first complaint. I don't think any of us would complain if we were held to the same community standards as every leftist who is on these platforms. But we know full well that the left and the big names on the left and the small names on the left can get away with saying anything on some of these platforms and nothing happens to them. I go back to my previous Facebook page, which I blew up because I got so mad and I said, I'm not going to play their game, for saying two men can't get married. I got kicked off Facebook. I didn't get permanently kicked off Facebook, but I got suspended from Facebook. Oh, you can't log in. You know, and I thought, I'm not playing this game. You need me more than I need you, and I'm gone. Now, that doesn't mean that I don't want to be on social media. I do. I just had a particular issue with Facebook. I don't like Facebook in particular. But there are a lot of other sites that you say, this is the best way to reach the biggest number of people for whatever content I want to put out there, whether it's a video or a post or what have you. So the community standards are not applied equally. You have all kinds of people throwing around some of the biggest threats and name calling and horrible, you know, insults and things like that. And you report them. Oh, no, they didn't violate anything. OK, right. But I get kicked off for saying two men can't get married, which is a fact. So those are not applied equally. And the other part is, what is their responsibility? What kind of responsibility do they have toward the people who are using their site? It's only a one-way community standard. What about your obligation to do the right thing by your users? Where does that kind of virtue kick in? Or does it ever kick in? We're going to see. We got to go to a break. We'll be back right after this. Stay with us. Are you among the millions of Americans who feel uncertain when it comes to your health care? As a Christian, are you looking for health care that doesn't violate your morals and convictions? Well, we're happy to inform you that there is a solution, and that solution is Liberty HealthShare. Liberty HealthShare is a community of like-minded Christians who work together to pay for their medical costs. It allows you to decide how, when, and where you will access health care so you can make the best choice for you and your family. Starting at $199 a month for a single, up to $529 a month for a family. That's mom, dad, and all the kids. This is how healthcare should be. For more information, call 855-585-4237 or visit lightyourliberty.com. That's lightyourliberty.com and regain control over your healthcare costs. 855-585-4237 or lightyourliberty.com. Together, we're changing healthcare for good. How much is one life worth? Most of us would say life is priceless, and we'd be right. After all, what is the value of someone created in the image of God? We're asking Janet Meffer Today listeners, just like you, to help us save babies through the ministry of Preborn. How does Preborn save babies? Through ultrasounds. Preborn works with hundreds of pro-life pregnancy centers across America, providing free ultrasounds for women in crisis pregnancies. And 80% of the time, when a mother sees her little baby on an ultrasound, she'll choose life. It's that easy. We need your help to support the vital work of Preborn in saving human lives. For your gift of $28, you can provide a free ultrasound to a mom in a crisis pregnancy. And for a gift of $140, you can provide 5 ultrasounds to 5 mothers. All you have to do is call 855-402-BABY. That's 855-402-2229. Or there's a banner to click at janetmefford.com. Thank you for saving a baby's life. We're back on Janet Meffer Today. The Democratic Party is embracing anew the idea of court packing. Presidential hopefuls like Beto O'Rourke, Elizabeth Warren, and Kirsten Gillibrand all have now expressed support for doing it. And a new Democratic group has even formed called Pack the Courts. It says its mission is to urge Democrats to restore the integrity of our courts by expanding the size of the lower courts and adding 4 seats to the Supreme Court after regaining control of the White House and Congress, they say, hopefully, on January 20th, 2021. We're going to get some thoughts on this now from Matt Staver, founder and chairman of Liberty Council. Great to have you with us, Matt. How are you?
Very good. Good to be with you, Janet.
Good. I'm going to give you a hilarious quote here from Politico. Elizabeth Warren said, you're going to love this. She said, it's not just about expansion. It's about depoliticizing the Supreme Court. Are you buying that?
I saw that. Yeah, depoliticizing. Well, we're all in favor of depoliticizing. The problem is that when you have justices on the bench or in any court, that actually interpret the rule of law, they think that that's political because they don't want justices or judges to interpret the rule of law. They don't want them to follow the words of the Constitution. They want them to impose their own subjective personal value system on the rest of America. That is a politicized court, and that has become the problem.
Yes. Do you think this is just an acute case of sore loser-itis on the part of the left and a desperation here?
I think there's no question about that. Obviously, they are desperate because they see that the Supreme Court, the activist court, the politicized court that they have relied on for such things as abortion and same-sex marriage is changing. And what you see is a new set of judges and justices at the Supreme Court that are committed to the rule of law. And they don't like that. And they want to actually expand the number of seats on the court for the next potential Democratic president. The contenders are saying they'll expand so that they can pack more people on the court. And what they call depoliticizing, which is actually, you know, the kind of the Orwellian type of term for using a term that doesn't mean what it says, actually completely the opposite. They want to politicize the bench. Now, at the end of the question here, can you reduce or expand the number of seats on the Supreme Court? Yes, there's nothing in the Constitution that says you need 9. In fact, historically, you've had fewer than that. But you've had 9 for so many years. I think these radical, what they call themselves progressive, I think it's called radical socialists, they're trying to pander to their group to separate themselves from the presidential pack to say that they will make this an expanded court and they will put new nominees on the court that will make it a very activist court. I don't think that they'll succeed at that. I don't think that even all of the Democrats, those that are not running for president, those that are in the Senate, those that are in the House, they're going to have to pass that through both the House and the Senate. They're going to have to overcome a filibuster. They'll have to have 60 people vote in the Senate to actually get to this vote. I don't think they're going to have those numbers, both from the Republican side, certainly, and I think they're not going to have enough Democrats to do this.
Yeah, I hope not. It's kind of interesting, the history on this, because FDR was known for his court packing. He wanted to help his New Deal legislation get through. It didn't end up working. But what kinds of differences or similarities do you see between FDR's motivation and today's motivation from Democrats? Same kind of motivation on both sides? We want to help our side?
Mm-hmm. It's the exact same kind of motivation. And in fact, during FDR's time, what is referred to as the switch in time, save nine, means that all of these economic pieces of legislation that he was proposing, the kind of foundation of a socialistic kind of system that he brought in with all these social programs, those were being struck down, and rightly so, at the United States Supreme Court on the basis that the Commerce Clause of the Constitution does not support that massive reach of Congress and federal government. That was the correct conclusion. He threatened to pack the court, to actually expand it beyond the number. And we had one justice that actually flipped the vote. We had some others that were beginning to flip the vote. They didn't want the court to be packed. So under pressure from the president, they literally switched their votes. And all the laws that they had struck down, now as they're coming back to that court, fearing that their composition would be diluted by expanding the court, they switched their votes. Nothing changed in the Constitution. They just switched and became more of a political arm of the president. And then all those laws were upheld despite the Constitution not supporting those laws.
Interesting. Well, Beto has also talked about term limits for the Supreme Court, and I think some others have also raised that idea. But doesn't that, in fact, really politicize the Supreme Court? They're supposed to be independent of term limits in a way that the legislature, I mean, obviously in Congress, we talk about term limits as well. But does that not also further politicize the Supreme Court if you start talking about term limits and don't give them that lifetime appointment? How do you come down on that one?
Well, I think that would politicize the court. But, you know, right now, take, for example, there may be more people that are in favor of that. I think what he wants to do, though, is he wants to do an age that would eliminate Justice Scalia. Mm-hmm. I think that's really what he wants to do. The problem that you see right now is Justice Ginsburg. She's up there in years, and she has had many medical problems, and she even falls asleep during some of the court sessions. So the real question is she someone who should still be on the court? There may be a broader consensus for that. Depends upon where you ultimately set that age, and I think there's no question that what he's thinking about, he wants to get rid, not of Scalia, but he wants to get rid of some of the more, like Thomas, Justice Thomas.
Right.
You know, he would certainly want to get rid of some of those more seasoned justices that are Republican nominees. And you're starting to see those. The older ones are from the early Republican presidential nominations that are still on the bench, including, obviously, Justice Clarence Thomas. The oldest one, of course, is Ginsburg. So that would automatically get rid of her.
But obviously,
he wants to get rid of Thomas.
Yeah, well, that's right. But it can cut both ways, because we've seen with the left on many occasions, they're for something until they're against it,
right. And
they become against it when it works against them. So even if you pack the Supreme Court, what if you get a Republican majority again and they fill it all up? Now, what, are they going to expand it again?
I mean, yeah, they'll just keep on going. I mean, there's no end in sight when you don't have any principle on which to argue. It's just like on the border security. Democrats were for it until President Trump was for it. Now they're against it. Democrats were for a lot of things, but when President Trump makes some policy decisions or statements, all of a sudden they become against it. So I think what you have here is the same kind of thing. They're, as you said, they're for something until they're against it, and they're only for something if it meets their end goal as opposed to their fundamental values. It seems like they're value system, if you want to call it that, constantly changes based upon political expediency. You saw that, for example, with Barack Obama. He was opposed to same-sex marriage before he then supported it. Same with Hillary Clinton. I mean, value system should be stable, but with people who have no constant worldview value system, it changes based upon their political objective endgame.
You're totally right about that. Well, you had mentioned before the fact that the number of justices on the Supreme Court has changed over time. We had six of them back in 1789. It went up to 10. It went down to seven. And then, as you said, since 1869, I believe it is, we've had nine justices. Is there something particularly good, do you think, about the number nine that should remain as is?
Well, you need an odd number. So you either need a five, or you need seven, or you need nine, or you need 11. An odd number is best. I mean, there are situations where it doesn't have to be an odd number, but an odd number guarantees that you're going to have a majority. An even number like six or eight or 10, you could have, you know, three and three, four and four, five and five splits and never have any decision at all. Mm-hmm. So I think an odd number is the best on any. That's why your federal courts of appeal, you have three judge panels there, and that way you get an odd number. You're going to have a decision, whether it's 3-0 or 2-1 or 1-2. You're going to have some kind of decision. So there's nothing in the Constitution that says that there's only one court in the entire country from a federal standpoint that is required, and that's the Supreme Court of the United States. There's no indication as to how many people should sit on that. That's a congressional issue that they have to pass. And it goes to the president. And there's no actual requirement to have any lower federal courts. In fact, we have created new circuits, courts of appeal, and we've created specialty courts like bankruptcy courts and admiralty courts and so forth, patent courts, tax courts. Those are not required in the Constitution. Those are congressional decisions. So the only one required is the Supreme Court, and the number has not been set by the Constitution.
Well, and yet you have this Democratic group I mentioned earlier called Pack the Courts that not only wants to add four seats to the Supreme Court, but wants to expand the size of the lower courts. Are the lower courts not big enough already? How much do we need to expand the lower courts and the judiciary as a whole? It just seems like we have an awful lot of courts.
Well, we do have an awful lot of courts. I think we ought to expand and cut in half, if you will, the Ninth Circuit Court of Appeals. It's a very large court, and it's the most frequently reversed court in the country of the United States Supreme Court. So I think that would be a good thing to do.
All right. Well, we'll have to leave it there. Matt Staver from Liberty Counsel, thanks so much for being with us, Matt. Thanks for joining us here on Janet Mefford Today. We'll see you next time.